Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I'm your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Today, I have a fascinating author to share with you. He is Raymond Bolton. Raymond lives near Portland, Oregon, with his wife, Toni, and their three cats, Georgie, Sophia, and Courtney. His goal is to craft gripping stories about the human condition, whether they are set here or in another world. He has written award-winning poetry in four novels. Awakening, a paranormal epic fantasy, released in January of 2014, is averaging 4.8 stars on Amazon and 4.6 stars on Goodreads. Thought Gazer, a fantasy adventure and first volume of a prequel trilogy, was released on January 1st of 2015 and was shortlisted by the same website for its 2015 Book Award. Foretellers, the second volume of the trilogy, was released on March 1st of this year. And finally, in 2015, he arranged to have Awakening translated into Spanish on July 1st of last year when it became Amazon's number one new release. I am so looking forward to learning more. So let's get started. Welcome to the show, Raymond.
Hi, Pat.
Thank you for being here today. Well, here's a very important question. Are your three cats part of your writing environment?
No, they're not. They don't contribute an awful lot except with love and affection. But often I just lock myself in the office early in the morning or go out into the garden and handle it out there. They seem not the least bit interested.
Oh, my. Well, I have rescued 11 ferals, so I have 11 cats roaming in and out and around. So, yeah, I can't keep them away. I just wondered how that
worked. Georgie was feral.
Were they?
So was Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
So, your cats, I assume, have their ears cropped, a little corner taken off?
I did. I actually, my last four I'm keeping in and out, and so I was able to find a place that did not do the ear tipping because they're mostly inside, so some of them are tipped and some not. Yeah, but it's been a joy. Cats have been a real good time here.
Yeah, they teach us a lot about ourselves.
They really do. Very, very, very true. Now, also, I wanted to know, are you a full-time writer? Is this what you do full-time?
No, I wish it were. My book sales are improving, but they haven't gotten anywhere near the point they'll support me. I am actually a high-end hairstylist and spent the last, 2.5 years until the end of 2014, commuting back and forth between Santa Fe and Portland. As I transitioned my business, I was on a plane every Wednesday, and I actually did a lot of writing there in the air and terminals as well.
So were you originally from Santa Fe?
No, originally I was born and grew up in Los Angeles in the middle of my sophomore year of college. I moved to San Francisco, lived there for a long time until 2004 when my wife and I decided we were tired of crowding and high prices of the Bay Area, moved to Santa Fe, lived there almost 10 years, and decided the place wasn't quite for us. We missed greenery and moisture, and so now we're in Portland, and I think we've landed.
You found home, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Santa Fe, though. It's a beautiful place. Lots of good energy for writing and art and those type of things, creativity.
It is. It actually reconnected me with my writing that I'd let lying dormant for a long time. When I was there, I connected with Penn, New Mexico, which was a southwest offshoot of the national organization, Penn, the organization mm-hmm. for poets, editors, and novelists, and was involved with them for a while, met a lot of other people, editors, other authors, and so on. They got me involved with my work, and it brought Awakening back from dormancy to an actual work.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads me to my next question. I wanted to ask you to take us back to that aha moment you had and explain how then you were led to the current writings that you're doing today.
Originally, what sparked Awakening was many, many years ago, in the mid-90s. it occurred to me, I was going through my bucket list, and I had always wanted to write a book, and it occurred to me that the only way to do that was to actually sit down and begin. I had no idea how to go about it, but little by little, the book took form. Oh, over the years, it was a messy process. My wife, who really is an avid reader, at one point when I thought I'd finished the book, told me that the ending was miserable and she didn't like it. And so I set about learning how to write. Read a lot of books that took me through the process. One would go through in an MBA program, and finally, after numerous rewrites, I entered it in the Pacific Northwest Writers Association's annual literary competition, where among 950 entries from the U.S., Canada, U.K., Europe, and Australia, I was one of eight finalists, and I decided at that point the book was ready for the world to see it.
How exciting that must have been for you, right?
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh, I love that story. I want to get into Awakening in a moment, but first I want to talk about the title of your website is Raymond Bolton, Crafting Worlds from Words. And I just thought that those four words very clearly define your writing. How did you come up with that?
While I was putting the website together, while I was putting businesses together and how I wanted to represent myself to the rest of the world, I think it just sort of materialized, much the way a lot of my stories do, much the way a lot of my characters present themselves to me. I just suddenly found myself with those words in front of me.
It's perfect, crafting worlds from words. It really does describe what you're doing. So let's talk about your first book, Awakening. You say it's a paranormal epic fantasy. Give us, if you would, a brief synopsis of the story.
Well, the premise of the story itself is... The book asks the question, how does a world armed with bows, arrows, and catapults, where steam power has only begun to replace horses and sailing ships, avert conquest from beyond the stars? The book is set on an alternate world, a world with binary suns. I, when putting the story together, didn't want to put something traditional onto paper. I realized that alien invasion is often the theme of conventional sci-fi. And it occurred to me, couldn't an alien world also be subject to alien invasion? And this is a story wherein a young prince awakens in a hospital room, and suddenly his world, his mind is filled with visions of murder and chaos in the palace, and he finds himself aware of other things around him that he ordinarily wouldn't have. He is then thrust into a situation where his world is coming apart. He finds he has been actually engineered to combat a predatory alien species that enslaves worlds telepathically. He has been actually engineered by a second alien race that has visited his planet. And to do what he has been created to do, he has to unite his people. But then when his mother murders his father, his world descends into chaos. Now, twice orphaned, the young man has to find a better way to bring his people together, faced with then slaying the one who gave him life, his mother. He struggles to find a better alternative.
Wow, what a premise. And reviewers have been very generous with the praise offering, and I thought this was very interesting, such comments such as, eschewing the more commonly overt manifestations of alien technology and the well-toted elements of fanciful magic, Bolton breathes originality into the genre with his singular focus on telepathy. The use of telepathy is kind of an unusual twist. What made you think to use that?
I decided that I needed something other than magic to move this what was now a fantasy forward. I wanted to avoid the traditional. Mm-hmm. And also, this is a world, the world I'd created was something, a place that technology had not yet evolved enough to help his people against these invaders. And I thought that at least this would give them somewhat of an edge. They also have other mental abilities that begin to evolve in the course of the book. So this is a book of psychic, the paranormal, and I like the things that are different. I like things that are non-traditional, and that struck me as a nice way to move the story forward.
And as I was studying this, I found this kind of interesting because you say that the use of technology wasn't sophisticated as it is today, but yet you've got this group that wants to breed a new food source, and they were using mind control. And I was thinking of the parallels to actual reality where we have Monsanto and the genetically modified foods today, and we've got the weapon-grade radio frequencies that are associated with cell towers and cell phones. It almost seemed like you were trying to draw a parallel to reality without being overt. Or maybe I'm looking into this a little bit differently.
Yes, the book began about 20 years ago, and we weren't aware of who Monsanto is, and cell phone technology in those days was still in its infancy. And I wish that I could say that I was enough of an allegorist that I was weaving that theme through the book, but no, it's merely coincidental.
Okay. I thought, is it just me, or was this what was supposed to be happening? Interesting, very interesting. And then this book was translated into Spanish, and I would imagine that was quite a complex task.
It was interesting, and the reason it came about, despite my reviews, I was finding that my sales were not surging. I was almost 80% of my reviews come in at 5 stars. The vast majority of the rest are at 4. There are a few 3-star reviews scattered throughout, and I'm saying, with all of this, why isn't my book just exploding? Mm-hmm. Then I realized that Amazon has more than 3.5 million titles online in the English language. In the year Awakening was published, 500,000 new titles came out. They were expecting 600,000 last year, and actually it was more than 800,000. And I realized I was being buried. Then I noticed that Amazon only had, and I don't recall exactly how this awareness came about, but Amazon only had a little over 90,000 Spanish language titles. I further realized that second to Mandarin, Spanish is the most widely spoken language on the planet. And then I learned that George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones, as well as Hunger Games, had both been translated into Spanish, and I realized that their publishing houses would not have gone through the expense or made the effort if they didn't believe there was a sufficient market.
Yes.
So I set about looking for a way to find out. Initially, I thought I had translation software. I went all across the internet, found one program that was rated with at better than 9 stars out of 10, I translated a chapter and sent it to a friend who's an instructor of Spanish at Manchester University in Indiana, not telling him how I did it, and he said, got back to me immediately and said, what your translator isn't telling you is that he used translation software, and this isn't even grammatical Spanish. And then he began coaching me as to what I needed to look for in a translator. He told me my translator needed to be a native speaker educated at the university level. And then, as chance would have it, one of my Santa Fe clients, when she heard what I was trying to do, said, I know somebody who'd be perfect. She introduced me to a man who runs a translation firm. He is from Barcelona. He has a master's degree from Harvard University. He is certified to interpret in the federal courts, which is a level of proficiency few people ever attain. And she introduced me to him. He read a little bit of Awakening, was delighted, thought it had the potential to become an international bestseller, but he didn't feel he had quite the skills to give the book a literary quality, so he handed the translation proper to an editor in his company who is in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Yet despite their credentials, there were some missteps early on in the process. I speak a little Spanish, not a lot, but enough to recognize the fact that when one character in the first chapter says, "What in the world have you been doing?" they translated it to, "What have you been doing in the world?" because the idiom doesn't exist in Spanish. And I realized I needed some more help. And again, another happy coincidence, I found myself talking to a woman who is a native English speaker and a professor of Spanish at a college in Santa Fe. She offered to help out with the project, lent her eyes to it, so she, being more sensitive to the nuances of the English, was able to catch and correct any of errors they might introduce into the book. And as a result, I find I have a world-class translation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, after all, those eyes saw it, and it was a very wise marketing move on your part, I'm sure.
The book was doing very well. I'm still learning how to navigate international markets, so sometimes it'll sell well, sometimes it'll lay idle, and I've just found a new site that is Spain's equivalent to Amazon. Looking at a contract with them, and I'm optimistic that once I introduce it to that market through that website, sales will start increasing again.
Such a promotional side to being an author that a lot of people don't even consider.
Interestingly, the large publishing houses now have actually put a lot of the marketing effort back onto the shoulders of the authors. Mm-hmm. So anybody writing a book now has to understand that even if they were to get Macmillan or Harper Brace or any of the major houses to handle their work, they are still going to be responsible for a large portion of the marketing. So one has to develop those additional skills as well.
Absolutely, and quickly too. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Then Thought Gazers and Foretellers are your most recent books. Give us just a little peek into those.
These are books that are... they arose for this reason. I tied up Awakening so tightly that it's very difficult for me to come up with a sequel, and a lot of people who have read it agree. However, the book is filled with so much prehistory woven into the story that these books actually arise from a scene, a situation that occurred much earlier in this world's history. And they lead the reader up in the direction of Awakening. There is a major war, there is a major conflict happening. And again, I use in each of the books, I'm working on the third in the trilogy now, come together with different skills to help the warlord who is trying to save the world from all evil counterpart. Thought Gazer is about a young man named Peniff, P-E-N-I-F-F, and he has been recruited because of his unusual mental abilities to by the other side, and his wife and children are imprisoned to coerce him to cooperate, and he instead elects to take the moral high road and attempt to subvert the malignant attempts and free his family before the truth becomes known and his family is slain. And the second story involves a mother and a daughter who are both able to see the into the future to varying degrees, although imperfectly. And again, they lend their efforts to the task. the final book, which will be titled Telekine, T-E-L-E-K-I-N-E, involves a young man who is crippled from the waist down, paralyzed from the waist down, but who has the ability to move objects with his mind. He is telekinetic. And the three together will then help resolve the story.
Oh, my. And it sounds like your characters are definitely characters. And I want to talk a bit about your process, because as I interview many authors, they tell me that their characters reveal themselves and take off in their own direction, kind of like bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like bad kids. Do you find that too, or are you in control of your characters?
Nobody's ever in control of their characters. I'll be writing a chapter. I am certain that I know which direction it's going. And as I begin to work through it, one of my characters will stand up, and it's a process of him revealing to me or her that you have drawn me in such and such a manner for me to proceed in the manner in which you are now trying to do so runs counter to who I am, and this is what I am going to do. Mm-hmm. And the novel takes off in a new direction.
Yep. Like kids.
Yeah, like kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I got it.
And I didn't believe it until I started doing it, and it happens time and again.
So I'm going to imagine my next question about plotster or panster. If you do an outline, I'm going to imagine you do a very light one, and then these guys take off.
Yeah, really, I am a pantser, meaning I write by the seat of my pants, mm-hmm. as opposed to writing an outline. But there are points when the story becomes complex enough that I have to sit down and at least sketch out what has happened. And regarding each of the subplots I've been weaving into the story, what then must occur logically for the story to proceed? And that often, I don't believe in writer's block. I believe when an author can't move forward, he doesn't know enough techniques to allow him to see the story clearly enough. And this is one of the tools I use that helps me continue to write even when I feel I've run up against a wall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting that you don't feel like you have the technique to go on. It's not necessarily just a mental block.
No, and actually in my latest story, I ran into the situation, but I didn't know quite how I was going to move the book forward from a point I'd reached. But I realized I knew several scenes that were definitely going to follow. So I began writing each of those scenes instead. And gradually, as I began to craft scenes from later in the book, how I would get from the earlier point to these scenes became more apparent, and it allowed me then to connect the two sections of the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about research? How much research goes into the writing of your books?
In fantasy, none at all. In fantasy, none at all. I had started to write a couple of thrillers, however, that will never be published, and a great deal of research went into them. Quick explanation, since we're short on time, as to why I'm not moving forward with those. They involve terrorism. One involved poisoning the water supply in Manhattan. I have a client who used to be a highly placed scientist at Los Alamos. She is now the U.S. State Department senior scientist in charge of the Middle East. And when she heard what I was doing, she said, please don't ever publish it.
Oh.
And I said, but no individual could ever put this together. She said, no, but you hit on something, and a foreign enemy state with unlimited resources easily could. And then that would result in the murder of 1.6 million people, the population of Manhattan. So that book is shredded.
Oh, my. That is a very interesting story.
It is.
We're not going to see the light of day, are we?
No, a number of years of research, mm-hmm. are forever going to be buried. The premise is too dangerous, too accurate. I hit on it, and actually it only took me about 15 minutes of internet searches to find everything I needed to arrive at the biotoxin. It kills in 36 to 72 hours. It's easy to produce, and
we'll just let that sit for a while.
Yeah, we will.
Let's talk about editing. Do you do your own editing? Do you hire an editor? Let's just talk about that process for a minute.
Yeah, I do a lot of my own editing. And early on, I'm very picky. I want my books to have a strong literary quality. So once I finish my first draft, I don't believe it is never good enough to show anybody else, but it has the storyline. So I will go back through and I will pick up whatever typos I can. I will refine the language until the book reads well enough at that point that I'll let another set of eyes look at it. Then my wife, Tony, will go through it. She's an excellent line editor, and she's great at picking out errors. I'll then rewrite and send it out to a series of beta readers who will go over the story review it for inconsistencies, parts of the book that are not clear, things that are too verbose and unnecessary, other areas which need to be expanded. I'll take their criticisms, work it back into the book. Tony gives it a final look, and then I send it out to some professional editors who give it a final go over before I publish it.
Excellent. That attention to detail is very critical. Congratulations to you for the care that you take.
How I present myself to the world, how I present my work is very, very important to me.
As it should be, and that's why your books consistently receive excellent ratings and reviews.
Yeah, I think so. It's a nice reward at the end of all of that effort to get that type of feedback.
Absolutely, absolutely. So now, outside of writing, any things that you're currently passionate about?
Well, the thing actually I am most passionate about at the moment is my writing. Years ago, I produced a series of benefit concerts to help out someone in need. I had wonderful people helping me. Craig Chiquiso, from the lead guitarist from the Starship, who wrote We Built the City in the World of Bluegrass. I had Peter Rowan and David Grissman, a number of wonderful people. And then after time producing those concerts, then I devoted myself to helping an ailing member in our family who was set adrift during the final years of her life. And after spending all of that time helping others, I've decided that at this point of my life, at least for now, I need to focus on myself. So I focus on myself and my writing, making myself a better writer, and that in turn, the diligence requires the need to sit down to avoid laziness in either how I write or when I write, I believe translates into making me a better person.
Oh, sounds like you've succeeded at all of that. You're a beautiful person. So what's next for Raymond Bolton?
What's next for Raymond Bolton is hopefully a lot more success. I'm being recognized in the writing world, and honestly, I would like to just transition back into this. I used to be a mainsail trimmer on racing yachts on San Francisco Bay. I would like to get back into that, have enough time for that. I used to pilot gliders. I would like to have time to do that sort of thing. My life right now centers around maintaining my marriage, something very important to me, maintaining our house, keeping up the writing that I'm doing, and taking care of my day job. I would like a little more free time so I could enjoy other things.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it. Well, I see good things in your future. So you're in the Portland area. Are there any places coming up where people can meet you and obtain signed copies in the coming months?
Yes. The 4th of July weekend, WesterCon, a major conference, is coming to Portland every year. It's in a different western state city. Last year it was in San Diego, and next year it will be in Tempe, Arizona. They're pushing for Denver the year after. This year I'm fortunate enough to have it here in Portland. It will be at the DoubleTree near Lloyd Center, and for 4 days, July 1st through 4th, I will be selling and signing my books along with numerous other authors in my genre and others, so readers can expect that. I will be selling more books at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association's annual literary conference which will be at another DoubleTree Hotel at the SeaTac Airport in Seattle. And that is, again, a four-day event. It's attended by more than 600 writers annually. It'll be attended by numerous agents and editors from major and minor publishing houses across the country. My books will be available there. I'll be teaching a course on having one's book translated. And then in November, back in Portland, again, Oricon, O-R-Y-C-O-N, is going to be held at the downtown Marriott along the Nato Parkway, the Willamette River waterfront. And for 2 days in November, I believe it's the 28th and 29th, again, I'll be selling and signing books.
Oh, what special times for you and for your readers to see you in person and get a signed copy. So I'm glad we were able to share that. Now, is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about today?
I think we've pretty well hit on all the major points, Pat. I really appreciate your having invited me to this program and giving me the opportunity to discuss my work and let people know a little more about it and myself as a writer. And I especially applaud the project that you're doing to support a group that creates custom-designed pillowcases for our men and women fighting overseas, and I'm glad to be a part of that charitable effort. I applaud you for what you're doing, because this is more than just giving people such as myself publicity.
Oh, I appreciate that, especially coming from you. When I saw your website, I knew I had to speak with you. I really just felt compelled to get to know you better. And I do want to share all of your website and where folks can go to purchase your book. So go ahead and give us any and all of that information.
Well, you can find me on Facebook at Raymond Bolton Author. You can search for me and my book titles on Amazon. And for the next few weeks, all of my ebooks, that's from I'm doing an end of spring, early summer sale where all of my ebooks are temporarily being dropped to 99 cents. That won't last long. But any people with either Kindle apps or Kindle readers can download a copy. I encourage you to. I think you'll enjoy the experience. I'm available on Twitter under the handle at Raymond Bolton. And yeah, I think those links alone will let people find all of my work.
All right, great. So the website is raymondbolton.com. I'm so pleased that you decided to share you and your expertise and your wisdom with our listeners today. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. It's been wonderful meeting you.